This is Rackalix After Hours.
Everybody. It's episode 93 of Rack Addicts After Hours. Welcome, and thank you for tuning in. It's going to be a three-piece today. Hooray! We've got another voice. It's Ben first, it's Telmo, and then there's Pete. A familiar crowd if you've been here for a while, but we haven't had you for a bit. Telmo, you've got to catch us up. What have you been doing over the last some time? I don't know when you were last here.
Oh, it's been about, a couple of months now?
Probably.
Month, something like that.
Yeah.
It's good to see you guys.
Oh, you. There he is.
What have I been doing? Well, I've slowly started dipping my toes into live music. So I went to see a few gigs, quite a few actually.
Ooh, delicious.
So when I was in Portugal for a couple of weeks, I saw an orchestra for the first time. So that was a massive thing.
Ooh, have you never seen an orchestra before?
No.
Cool.
So that was amazing. There was this Youth Orchestra and they played Tchaikovsky and like some really modern pieces, like some out there stuff as well. Then I saw this flamenco singer called Silvia Cruz Perez. That was amazing. Got back in the UK and saw Flight in Brighton, which I will talk about in my recommendations. They're an amazing band.
Perfect. That's where the Beatenberg recommendation from 4 or 5 episodes
That's
ago.
It.
I don't have amazing taste. Telmo does have amazing taste. And also, I will... did I recommend Low Island last episode? Yes, I did. I will cop to that as well. I also didn't discover them. I think I mentioned that was my friend, John.
Man, that was so good.
Telmo enjoyed it on the drive here. We also enjoyed butchering some classical composers. What do we have? We had Rachmaninoff, Bach. Who else?
Well, the one that comes to my head, I couldn't really say it.
Oh, yeah, we'll ignore that one. Who else was it?
Mozart.
Oh, yeah, Mozart.
Mozart.
It's fun.
Yeah.
We like messing with words.
We like it. We like it. Thanks to you, Ben. You've got a way with words.
Oh, I do try. Oh, it's lovely. Ooh. This. I've been watching Bake Off. Have you been watching Bake Off?
No.
It's very English. Very English of us. But this time there is a vegan bakist.
Oh, a vegan
baker.
Edition.
Just one.
Just the one.
So that's why Steph was interested. It's been pretty cool. There is a great contestant called Jürgen.
Okay.
And he is the most German person that could possibly exist. Spoiler alert, he's won Star Baker twice in a row, so you know he knows his stuff. But he's... I don't want to imitate his accent because that seems culturally insensitive, but he's brilliant.
I could see him like as a sort of like character that has absolutely no emotion. It just like...
No, everything. Not at all.
Not at all.
He's really good. He's really good fun. It's a good season of Bake Off.
Bake Off sounds amazing. I mean, I like to bake. I've never watched any sort of Bake Off season or anything. I know it's been around for a while now.
Yeah, it was better. I think the presenters aren't so great now. Still got Paul Hollywood, but Prue Leith is kind of meh. And then Noel Fielding and that one bald guy.
Do you feel like you've taken anything from the Bake Off?
No, not at all. I just enjoy
hours of amusement and joy, Pete.
That's kind of the stuff. Oh, yes. Pete, you showed me, and I'm staring at, a very nice flight case for these Some Sovenbuzz by Shure. What have you been up to, apart from getting a really sexy-looking flight case for a good deal? Yeah, because if you buy the brand name, that one would have been 80, if not 100 and something, that kind of size, if you got
that
Pelican.
That was very well priced. That was £40 from Amazon.
Right. Jeff's own.
Mostly this week, I've been indulging in some nostalgia. So if you bear with me, let me hand a document. I've got several documents here. Let me hand one. First one I'll hand to Telmo.
Lovely.
Careful, it is very old.
Let me put my tea away. Oh, my God. Right, everyone, I'm looking at an original Yamaha DX7 manual or a catalog. No, it's definitely a catalog. Man, check it out.
Oh, that is cool.
Is this the MK1, MK2? What do you reckon?
Let's have a
little look.
I've bumped the mic. Sorry, Pete.
Check the dates out. There will be publishing dates on there.
Excellent. Okay, so...
Be very careful.
Since 1887, Yamaha, Nippon Gakiko, printed in Japan. Dates. So I guess this is more of a...
Is it brochure when they did
brochure
those...
that you'd get in a shop.
Yes.
People used to ask us for those.
Yes.
They're like, oh, do you have any info on these Roland pianos in... Brochure forms,
wow.
Like mass on the internet, mate.
Well, the first thing that comes to my mind is the actual colors. It's so 80s. It's so out there, isn't it? Like the design and everything.
I'm still searching for
a date. I bet these goes for crazy money on eBay or
quite
something.
Quite possibly.
I'm drawing a blank on the date, Pete.
I'm sure there's one on there somewhere, but I've got others here for you to gaze at that definitely do have dates.
That's cool. We've got the specifications on the back. 61 keys, C1 to C6, initial and after touch sensitive. After touch, actually two words this era. FM tone generator, 6 operators, maybe that's a typo, 32 algorithms, polymode, 16 notes, monomode, 1 note, 32 bank, 32 memory, 32 bank times 2, 64 memory. These are the internal RAM, ROM, and external RAM. This is brilliant. Accessories, music stand, ROM cartridge, times 2, 64 voices, times 2. Specifications and design are subject to change without notice for improvement.
Wow, the value of digital synthesis.
Right, I've got another one for you. This is from the great days of Roland. Cop that one.
Oh
my.
Schnitzel.
We've got a Jupiter 8 on the front. Apologies, Pete, this isn't me being very weird. I'm going to smell it.
Oh, I forgot to smell the other one.
It has that wonderful smell of aged paper. Apparently that's a fungus.
Really?
From what I know.
Sort of parchment fungus.
Yeah, but it means old paper smells amazing. Ooh,
can you digest it?
The Roland MC4 microcomposer and the digital cassette recorder MTR-100 to expand your MC4.
Woohoo!
Is this a really early like sequencing?
Yep, that'll definitely thing. Have a date, publishing date on it somewhere.
Yeah, this is more of a catalogue rather than a brochure.
I have seen an MC4 on Reverb recently.
Oh, here we go. Okay, printed in Japan, March of 83. And it's got the distribution network map on there. Ooh, who have we got as a distributor in the UK? Of course, it's Roland UK. Silly of me. Oh, man. Okay, so MC4 microcomposer, the System 100M. We've got the three keyboard options, the 184, the 181, and the 180.
If you are just tuning in now, we are a bunch of millennials smelling catalogues from the 80s, by the way.
Yeah, that's a hobby, doing it in a spare time. Oh, this is brilliant. We've got a list of all the System 100 modules, 110 through 182. The OP8 CV interface for the microcomposer. Ooh, the JX3P. And programmer, Jupiter. Ooh, here we go. We've got prices in here. Let's have a look.
Unfortunately not.
Ah,
no, I can that. Tell you that the Jupiter 8 was beyond my reach financially.
Gotcha.
I don't know why. For some reason, I've got lodged in my mind it was around £1,500.
Mm. Gotcha.
But I could be wrong. Memory's a funny thing, especially when we're talking the best part of 40 years ago.
Mm. So we're talking about mid-80s?
Yeah, I mean, well, this is early 80s. Yeah.
Early 80s.
I had a Jupiter 4, which I've talked about many times on the podcast. I can't even remember how much I paid for that. The only one I can distinctly remember how much it cost is this, which is the original brochure I got about the same time as I bought the original.
There we go. The S-Age 101, everybody. Now, Roland's special.
Definitely seem to remember that the S-Age 101 was £199.
Gotcha.
In 1982, which I believe when we plumbed that figure into the Bank of England inflation calculator, it gave us a cost of something like £670 in today's money.
They probably go for what, double that now?
Yeah, I mean, good condition ones are still trading for sort of between 800, 900 to 1200. Mm. I mean, they do seem to fetch a lot for what they were. They were a very inexpensive synth at the time. The sort of trigger handle thing, they sort of turned into a keytar, I seem to remember, was $24.99.
Yeah.
So it was a separate purchase.
So that's an optional MGS1 modulation grip set that you can perform in a standing position. Allows you to perform in a standing position.
Yeah, my opinion is the quickest way to look like a ripe prawn.
Absolutely. In the Roland catalogue, we've got an Echo Chambers section at the back featuring the RE501 Chorus Echo, RE201 Space Echo. And actually, there's an SRE555, which is a rack mount version of the 501.
Right.
Other than that, looking the same, but that's pretty cool.
I mean, it was a time when virtually everything that Roland produce is now today considered a classic.
Yeah.
Pretty much everything.
Everything.
The only ones that were completely unknown to me, there's a small digital piano section at the back, which is rather intriguing.
This is an interesting one for you, Telmo, because things haven't really changed a lot.
Oh, the Boss catalogue. Ah, nice. Telmo, it's good to have our guitar man back.
Nice, guitar man's back.
I mean, some of the pedals are identical to the ones they sell now. Nothing has changed.
Absolutely. There are a few changes to some of the bass models, but in theory, they all do the same anyway. I mean, this is just classic Boss stuff. This catalogue is from 1982, and it features most of Compact Effects devices by Boss, and also actually features a CE1 chorus ensemble, very much famous for its lush vibrato. There's also some really cool reverb boxes, the sort of like, it looks to me like the sort of like early Micro series.
Oh yeah, those little half rack things. Those are quite cool.
These are the DM100 and the RX100. Oh, I haven't seen this before. Like the Pocket series. Look at that.
Oh yeah.
like Tiny Amps. They should totally use this. Should totally like redo this again.
Mm-hmm. Maybe that's early amp simulation type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And here's when Roland were into a load of, well, I wouldn't say outboard because it's not actually outboard, but it's rack mount stage equipment, which they don't do anything similar at all nowadays.
No, that's a bit left field.
The Roland rack.
The Roland rack. That's interesting. So what have we got? Oh, guitar, preamplifier.
Uh-huh. So you got power amps, bass and guitar preamps.
The SIP series, 300 and 320.
Okay, so this is the Dimension D, the STD320. This is the mythical STD320.
Yeah, that Behringer have cloned.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Don't know if you can get it yet.
Wow. Okay, so there's the vocoder one as well. I didn't even know they did a stereo flanger. Look at that. A flanger.
Wow. Oh, amazing.
Wish I still had the actual unit, but I still have the original owner's manual for my Roland Jupiter 4.
Ooh. Take it away. Cool. Look at that. Well, I have to say, the Jupiter 8 is cool, but the Jupiter 4, it just looks so cool, man.
That is brilliant.
Wow. That's something else, right?
Ooh. And my original owner's manual for my Juno 60 as well.
Oh, brilliant.
Oh,
what a treasure trove.
Why did I sell those things?
Oh, my God.
Oh, here we go. This is quite an interesting... It was great having these manuals because we've got an introduction to the synthesizer kind of section. Three qualities of sound. The three qualities of sound are pitch, tone, colour, and... That's four. Brilliant. The three qualities of sound are pitch, tone, colour and loudness.
Mate, this is amazing.
I think that...
Oh, wait, no. Tone colour.
One word, one expression. Yes, I was just thinking because possibly it was back in the day when the manuals were translated straight from Japanese to various other languages, possibly.
Okay, now this is something really handy. Remember when they did the sound synthesis memo? On like they put this sort of stuff in manuals, which is like literally the layout, and then you put all your parameters on, and then you'll never forget it.
Of course, yeah, brilliant.
Making your own presets, right?
Did the 60 have presets?
Yeah, but there's not that many. No, but the 6 didn't have any presets, and the 60 did.
Gotcha.
Mm, wow.
Again, it was another synth where I didn't really know what I had. You never know what you had until you haven't, or until you've lost it.
Mm.
The reproduction of the programmed sound. That's recalling presets in old money.
This is just making me think if I should ever sell anything.
The trouble is I can't purchase or repurchase any of these synths because they've gone to astronomical heights in the cost.
Yeah. Mm.
I think I mentioned a few weeks ago that I had seen a Jupiter 8 on eBay for $24,000.
Yeah.
I've now seen another one above
$30,000. Oh, no. It's getting worse.
It's getting absolutely ridiculous. In fact, I was watching Christian Henson.
Yeah.
And he was doing a sort of revised studio tour last week because he's had some... modifications done to his garden shed, as he likes to call it, and he was going over his classic synth collection, and he's certainly got a Jupiter 4, and he was saying that he only bought it about 15 years ago, and he'd only paid £300 for it.
Is that how much you sold yours for when you sold it 15 years ago?
I don't know. No, it wasn't 15 years ago. I sold mine more like 30 years ago.
Right.
Okay.
But the fact it was only 15 years ago, they were £300, and now they're north of £4,000.
Mm.
There's so many things, so many various different assets, not just in synthesizer world, but there's so many assets that seem to have accumulated ridiculous amounts of value.
Mm. And I think that's happening a lot more, and not just with Roland, but with any piece of equipment, it doesn't matter how bad it was. Like, if you look at the prices of the Poly 800 or the Korg Poly 800 or the Poly 80, the
Korg's... Doesn't even ring a bell, it's that obscure.
Yeah, it's Korg's answer to the Roland Juno 60.
I have a brochure for that.
Right.
Poly 800.
That was considered like just as bad as one of those Casio's SK1s, and now they're just going for £500-600.
Mm-hmm. I can see those there.
This one is very, I wouldn't say fragile, but careful with this one, but that one's going to interest you.
General Analog.
You just need to open that one up.
God.
Oh, all the good stuff.
Yes, the X911, the guitar synthesizer. I was looking at that recently, actually.
MS-10, 20, and 50.
Wow.
Ooh, is that the Korg Lambda over there that's also over there?
It's over, just hiding under those curtains.
Yeah.
Wow, MS-50, MS-10, the Monopoly. All the good stuff, man. All the good stuff is here.
Nice one. Ooh, that actually features this one, the PS-3200 is a Korg Poly that features in Olafur Arnold's studio tour that Christian Henson did. That's a really good watch. Although he has a cold at the time, so he's a bit sniffly.
I thought you guys would like
to see
that.
Absolutely. What a treasure trove.
Thank you so much for showing us this.
No problem at all. Yep. I prefer to have the original equipment rather than just some brochures, though.
Well, but at least you have something from those equipments.
Yeah, I mean, that they relate, I mean, to the time that I actually had them. But you could just go into your local music shop and just fill your boots, so to speak. Just grab all these lovely yeah. colour brochures. Nowadays, so people come in and go, have you got a brochure for that? No. Sorry, it's all on the internet.
Yeah.
But it makes sense. I mean, that's not cheap to print all that kind of glossy publications like that. It's an unnecessary expense, really.
Mm. You'd have to wait too long for them to develop that wonderful smell.
Yeah.
Is it just me? Or do you both like that old smell? I loved it.
I mean, you get it with old books, don't you?
Old books, old sleeves for records and things as well.
Amplifiers.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's a sort of sweet, dusty smell. And you're saying it's some sort of bacteria that kind of...
That's what I've heard.
I would be surprised. Some sort of something that likes to live there, but it doesn't seem to destroy the paper, does it? It just seems to inhabit it.
Yeah.
It's almost a kind of sickly sweet smell, isn't it? You get really old books.
Yeah, a little bit strange.
Excuse me?
Oh, yeah. Okay, so it's due to the organic materials, cellulose and things from the trees, reacting with light, heat and water and releasing volatile organic compounds. Toluene, ethyl benzene, benzaldehyde.
Cool.
Mm. Dodgy sounding chemicals, most likely from the paper production process.
Mm.
One would assume the paper production process. Okay, tell me, there's some news that you've missed.
Go on.
That I'm shocked that we didn't tell you.
Go on.
That is absolutely right up your street, the Rhodes. Mm-hmm. So,
what?
Rhodes.
The R-H-O-D-E-S is returning?
Mm, yes. Rhodes is a company once more. I never really got to the bottom of who and how and why and when and what the legal ownership and stuff is, but it's coming back and it's going to be called the Mark 8. And we now have photos, we now have sound, but they're doing it properly. Electromechanical, old circuits.
Oh, my God.
There was a good quote that I found in a previous podcast, which was to the tune of doing the bits that should be mechanical and stuff, mechanical and things, and then modernising the bits that are actually useful to modernise. But there are sounds on the Instagram, which you can go and check out, but we've got proper photos now, which it looks great. So we've got a silver front panel.
Man, that never looked so good.
Yeah, black Tolexi stuff, as we'd mentioned before. We've also got close-ups of the controls, and this one just shows the sort of the preamp, the EQ, and the output kind of section, but we've also seen sneak peeks of an optional multi-effects engine that you can get in there. So I don't know if it'll just be reverb, delay, it could be all the chorus modulation stuff as well.
Yeah, I would say phaser and tremolo is probably a
those
big
are the
thing
important of, ones,
yeah,
definitely.
For a Rhodes.
So,
wow, that's such great news. Honestly, it's probably one of the most iconic pieces of gear that haven't seen a reissue lately. I mean, I cannot think of anything this iconic.
Well, there's the Vintage Vibe version. That's a whole company that's dedicated to making Rhodeses at the moment. And the big question is whether the new official Rhodes will be any more affordable than those.
But that's more of a boutique thing, isn't
it? It is,
not like
definitely.
It's the name. It's there. Rhodes. Is it owned by Fender still?
I don't think so.
We had this discussion. We felt that someone had bought the name, title, or whatever you want to call it from Fender, which is allowing them to go forward with the manufacturing process in the UK.
Definitely.
So they'd be made in the UK?
Yes, I did. I can't remember off the top of my head and I don't know where to find it, but we did reveal the location of their factory at one point from some article that we found. I'd recommend going on their Instagram following that, and you can also sign up for news on
where have I been my whole life?
Not here, not on the podcast, you silly. Well, now you know.
That's
and
amazing.
And you can
news.
Start saving, hopefully, early enough to buy one.
Yeah, so what we're thinking, 4,000? Six.
I think we landed around the 3,500 to 4,000 when we discussed it last time.
That's the Vintage Vibe one though, isn't it? Was around that sort of price.
Well, we were thinking of this one as well, and we didn't reckon it would actually be much cheaper.
Didn't they say in their blurb that they'd sort of made it, but they're going to make it better, which possibly might mean make it more expensive
potentially. I was saying to Telmo they wanted to keep it analog and mechanical in the places it needed to be, but have some quality of life features.
I actually see them making some sort of a range where you can sort of go from sort of like a beginner sort of you just want to play the electric piano, you just want that actual mechanical sound. So I don't see them adding any stuff there, and then having sort of like a top-up model where they add MIDI and another one where they have effects and stuff like that. There could be that.
Well, given that there's no effects on that one, and we've seen a picture of kind of an effects section. It definitely looks like there's going to be options on them. It'd be cool because it'd make it a little bit more in reach if you've got something like your UAD.
Yeah.
All the effects you could want, just grab the one that has a volume control and nothing else.
And then you have keyboard sizes as well, because you can go from 54 to 88.
And of course, there was the old bass one that they that Fender made back in the day. There could be options later.
And that one as well.
Although I don't know that they'd sell many, because I don't know if anybody cares about it.
Well, Ray Manzarek from The Doors popularized that one. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much all I know about it.
I know nothing at all. I just know it exists.
Yeah, it sounds good though.
Mm-hmm. We've had some Roland words today from those vintage catalogues. There is a company that's going after that chorus sound. I think a lot of people have done that, because there's the TC June chorus.
Yep.
And Behringer have also done the one with the yellow buttons.
Mm-hmm.
Loads of people have done it, but this company claims to be the most accurate at the moment. It's a company called Made on Earth. They've announced pre-orders for the Analog Chorus 60, and it's supposedly a perfect clone of the Juno 60 chorus circuit. That's going to be mono in, I believe, stereo out. There's an external input for LFO speed, and you have controls for input level, stereo width, depth, and of course, rate.
I've always thought the Juno 60 chorus was the Dimension C thing, the dimension.
I don't know enough about the ins and outs of those.
Well, there's a couple of, or a chip in there that became excruciating or impossible to find.
Right.
I can only surmise that these guys possibly have somehow reverse engineered one of these.
Well, this one says it uses two X-Vive MN3009. The word X-Vive is worrying because of those, you know, those terrible X-Vive wireless guitar things. Yes. Anyway, I'll assume that's
wireless systems.
And apparently the original Panasonic 2X MN3101, and it said, yep, those are rare parts. Original transistors, lots of numbers that I'm sure you don't really care about, but there we go.
Have you seen the video, Pete?
No, but I think it's most probably very glamorous and glossy.
Yeah, it looks all right. It's got some, the potentiometers have LEDs in them, I think, so they change color, which is kind of nice. It's not the prettiest thing I've ever seen,
and it's a foot pedal by guitar type effect.
Yeah,
not really aimed at keyboards though, is it then?
Well, they've only put keyboards through it in these videos, but
okay.
$525.
You used to be able to build a Urac kit of it, but because the chips became impossible to get,
it was
pointless buying the kit, because that was the one part of the kit they didn't supply. But as I say, if someone's taken it upon themselves to refabricate the chip or somehow found a supply of them, then that's a different prospect altogether.
Who knows?
Nice. Who knows?
Telmo, $525, would you have one?
Probably not. I would really struggle to see if it would make sense in my rig, unless I had something that would sound exactly like a Juno, or something that I wanted specifically that Juno chorus that I don't know what it is, if you see what I mean. So
probably not.
But easier to hunt down a decent working Juno 60.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, what would that go for? Sort of 2000?
Somewhere in that region, I reckon.
So, yeah, so $525, we're talking about a quarter of the way to getting the real thing. Maybe I'm a bit not very much aware of how important that is for the sound or whatever.
Well, yeah, if you turn the chorus off the Juno stuff, they can sound a bit thin and sad. Either way, maybe. Maybe not. It's there if you need it. More Roland stuff.
There we go.
There is a leak of a sequel to the SP-404, the sample box thing that I just have a hatred of because of the shop. And people go, oh, how's this work? Can I demo this? And I had no idea what it was. Well, I knew what it was, but I had no idea how it worked. Nor did I care, so I developed an unbridled hatred of the thing. It also looks stupid. I'm pointing and laughing at the things. It looks weird. Do you care about the SP-404, Pete?
Not at all.
Figures.
I was having a look at the Black Corporation 8-voice Roland-inspired thing that's still on pre-order.
Roland-inspired
thing. We discussed it. So the manufacturers of the Deckard's Dream.
Yeah, I didn't know they did a... Well, they were
got
doing
an 8-voice Roland-inspired. I'm not sure they've been a bit vague about it, so I don't know whether they're sort of inferring it's Jupiter 8-ish or something of that ilk.
Yeah, no, I totally did, and I completely forgot. Yeah, 8-voice analog synthesizer inspired by the another iconic Japanese classic. Ooh, It does look the part, though, doesn't it?
Yes, until you see the price. I initially thought, oh, that's cheap, and then I realised that was just the down payment.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Pre-order it.
Pre-ordering the built one is $1,199. That's just the thing. Here we go. Where's the thing?
It says you go further down.
$3,749.
Ouch.
I think possibly the Deckard's Dream is worth that sort of money.
Well, that is your CS80 option.
Yeah, I mean, what does the real CS80 going to set you back? Some eye-watering large amounts of money. Plus
Definitely.
The fact you've got to maintain the thing. It's a 45-year-old synth.
Ouchie. But there's free worldwide shipping. Bargain.
It should be 45 years old.
Yeah, that's it, mate.
It's at least
40 it.
Years old. Most probably is 45 years old.
Definitely in the ballpark.
Hey, Siri, how old is the Yamaha CS80?
You're not...
Okay, I found this on the web for how old is the Yamaha...
44 years.
Oh,
there we go.
Pete, that's just not good enough. You're out a whole year. I'm disappointed in you.
You had better
joking,
memory.
Joking, of course. Joking. Here's
Fantastic.
Some news I actually care about. Remember, don't know if it was the last episode or the episode before, when I sort of slagged off the new Arturo interfaces because I don't care and they're really boring? Well, Universal Audio has done almost the same thing.
Yeah, I noticed those. I had an email from our favourite music equipment emporium.
Yes, indeed. Have they turned up in the shop yet?
I haven't seen them. I've only saw the email circular that we've sent out.
I haven't seen them.
Oh, look, they've done a range of affordable audio interfaces, which I suspect, I don't know what the D2A converters are going to be like, but certainly going to be no DSP in there.
No, there's something, but it's definitely not what we know and love. You can't use them with the plugins, and you can't use them with Luna. I mean, you can use them with Luna if you already have a Universal Audio full
fat Mac
one.
User.
Of course.
So these look a bit more generic. They're USB attach, and they look like it was just USB-C.
Yes, indeed.
But yeah, not, was it C?
USB-C, yeah.
2.0 speeds.
Regular power supplied, a kind of 12 volt or something.
Yeah, so they're really poorly named.
There's a cool thing, though.
Volt 176, 276, and 476. The 76 refers to the fact that you've got some form, I don't know how they're modelling it, of modelled 1176 style compressor circuits with presets for voice guitar and other, which is specific. But that's kind of cool. You've got those on the preamps, which is kind of nice. You only have two preamps if you want preamps. You have the 176 is one preamp and the others both have two. But then on the 476, you've got extra line-ins and some extra outputs and such. They're the format that I like, which is sort of the top-down volume control and gain controls on the top side, and they do look pretty classy. So, I mean, they might be good, but we'll have to find out what's going on with the A to D and D to A.
And they're sort of competitively priced, let's say.
Yeah, I had those earlier. We've got, in euros, 139 for the one preamp, 189 for the two, and then the expanded one with two preamps, 299 euros, so probably £275 to £299, I don't know.
Yeah, that's quite...
They're trying to do the same thing as SSL. In fact, lots of people are trying to play in that space now, aren't they?
Yeah, SSL and kind of Audient sort of zone.
I think they're trying to reach different markets.
If they've got decent quality converters in them, then it's most probably quite a good prospect.
Yeah, they could well be all right.
And so, they come with MIDI as well, in and
yes,
out.
Yes, that's something I really like. 5-pin DIN MIDI in and out, that's very nice.
Do you think they've actually made these themselves, or do you think they just rebadged them?
Yeah, who knows? Who knows?
I don't know much about the fabrication of their units.
No.
I know a lot of their outboard we can't sell in the UK or couldn't sell in the UK because of the materials.
The old manufacturing in America thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that happens occasionally. I don't know. It would be really interesting to know the OEM situation for the audio interface world, because I'm sure there's one company that does a lot of it out in China somewhere.
I personally haven't had any briefings from Universal Audio. We used to all scuttle off to Topgolf and get
those were the days.
A slap-up meal from them, and all you had to endure was an hour of
presentation,
and then it was off to the driving range and the many burgers you could build and eat.
Yep, those were the days.
Yes, pre-COVID.
Yeah, that was
course,
amazing.
Yeah. Oh, you came on one, didn't you?
No, I've never came. Oh, I missed one. I actually complained to Universal Audio about that.
Did you actually?
Because I was like, the only opportunity I had, I ended up missing. But this means you guys need to keep doing it so I can try now, see if I could go next time.
Hopefully they do them again one day.
Yeah, I hope so.
I spookily won the golf championship.
Of course
thing.
You did.
Oh, wait, last time we went, and I hate golf, yeah. And I'm really bad at it, and it was just by fluke, and some of the other guys are actual golfers, and I was just whacking these things randomly in all directions and won.
They were probably all drunk, and you were just like...
Yeah, well, I don't drink alcohol, but so I've still got the very tasteful crystal trophy somewhere around. I don't know where it is, lurking.
Your pride and joy.
Yeah.
Mate.
Well, that's
legend.
All I picked up for synth news. Telmo, anything interesting that's happened in the guitar world that we need to know about? Anything recently?
Well,
big news?
Big news. Not big news. There's something from Gibson that was released a couple of weeks back.
Yeah.
That the Generation series. So Gibson is kind of like the Universal Audio of guitars. They've been around for years. They've reached really high-end markets. And with the Generation series, what they're trying to do is that they're trying to be more affordable to some sort of the intermediate player. And with the Generation series, what they've done is that they've kind of strip off all sorts of fancy bits and bobs and nitros, so the last finishes and whatever. And what it does have is just a really nicely well-built, fully American acoustic series that goes from the 00L00 series, which is the tiny parlor, to the J200, which is the jumbo size. They're just really nicely made in America with decent materials without all the bits and bobs that would make it a premium instrument. It does come with an interesting thing. You know, the sound hole. There's a second sound hole right in front of you. So like on the top, sort of like near the armrest.
Oh, yeah. I've seen that on a couple of acoustics.
Yeah.
It's not a common feature, that.
No, I think it's quite cool. I've played one. And I think it improves the sort of resonance, and so it's not only obviously makes you hear better, but there's some sort of more detail and more resonance that comes out from the instrument when you hear it from as a perspective of a guitar player.
That's pretty cool.
So yeah, it's definitely something to look after, or just to try it if you're around a guitar shop and you just want to try a nice acoustic. I think they go for about £800. So that's considerably less for an American Gibson guitar. That's
definitely
what I think that popped in my head at the minute. Nothing else.
Nice one. Well, Pete, are you ready to mod some calf tomorrow?
Yeah, tomorrow evening. Well, I will appear. There will be sounds of a variety, and
then you will disappear again.
Yeah, then I'll disappear again for another year. We'll see. Just see how it goes. As I said last week, I had this wonderful patch and didn't take any notes when I dewired it. So my new strategy is that I get an initial kind of sound going,
yeah,
and then I'll potentially start patching it as we go, and we'll just have to see what happens.
We'll see how
it'll
we
be
go.
Very experimental.
Excellent. That's what we like. We also have the next month, the November one, we've got the big room, I think I mentioned. So if you want to do 2 months in a row, unprecedented, then we'd love to have you, because we're trying to get lots of people to perform.
Okay, I'll have to put something out the hat possibly on that one. See what else I've got in the maybe. I wonder if I can crack that thing open.
You've got a bit of a hoard of synths.
Yes, the lower flight case has got the pedal board, the large pedal train board in it, and it's got the selection of, you know, the Digitech, and the AS1, and well, two AS1s to be honest.
Yeah.
But I was going to replace one of the AS1s with a Typhon.
Yes, indeed.
Nice.
One kind of narrowly, kind of possibly could have slipped through my fingers at the weekend. Gentleman came in and pie exchanged a number of items, but he didn't pie exchange the Typhon that he was thinking about. But anyways, yeah, so that could be a possibility.
Cook we'll something up. That'd be great.
Ben, can you tell us a little bit about the schedule for the Mod Calf for the next month or so? Because I would be quite interested.
I've forgotten it all. We've got, obviously, tomorrow. We've got November and we've got December. While I'm talking, I will look up the dates. These are now back in the old venue. The West End Centre.
Back in Aldershot.
Our spiritual home. We were in Ash Parish, which is around the corner. We had a free function room in a pub, which worked out all right, but it was a bit cosy, which wasn't quite what we were about. Yeah, we're back to normal. And as I mentioned, the November one is going to be quite giggy, in theory. Lots of live sets is the plan, Stan. And we also have quite a lot of more exciting rumblings. Have I mentioned anything about the more exciting rumblings at all?
Well, you've mentioned there was more exciting rumblings. I'm not sure you've fleshed them out.
What can I flesh out about these more exciting rumblings? There is a very large concrete box in Farnborough.
Was that something that you were looking at doing possibly last year and then didn't happen?
Exactly.
With lasers and things.
That was the Void Null thing. Yes, the Void Null show that didn't end up happening, but similar plans. We're also talking to some big artists that everybody will have heard of. And we might be recording in such a space.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
What are the acoustics like?
Insane. I still haven't been, which is annoying. We're talking a 16-ish second reverb.
Oh, my God.
And because it's a concrete box with strangely angled walls, some crazy delay if you want your slap stuffs.
So you don't put any effects on your stuff. You just make noises and let the room just do the talking.
Exactly.
So
I
when
will say no more.
When can we?
No more.
Please.
No.
I beg you.
Let me get you the dates.
What's happening about Illumination?
Illumination. Well, it doesn't really matter. Well, I'll tell you more later.
Okay.
Another time. Okie dokie.
I am rubbing my hands.
Let me have October tomorrow. Yes, tomorrow. Where's the thing? Yes. Okay. 10th of November. 8th. Of December, 7:30 p.m. West End Centre in Aldershot. £3 a head.
I'll see you there.
Ooh, be good to have you back. Delicious. I'll be going from work, so I can't give you a lift. But
what time should I turn up?
7 normally works quite well, or a little bit before.
Yep, that suits me.
Sounds gravy. Well, of course, as I've mentioned before, there is a bit of a backlog of things for me to put up on SoundCloud. By the time I get round to it, there should be about 4 new things.
So
be nice.
What did you use for these 4? Was it with the Plinky?
These were from previous meetings. Okay. The Plinky demo was whatever.
Nah.
We had Ben Francis, who did a kind of trial run for a set that he did in Wales, actually, which was really ambient and cool. And we had Jeremy. Yes, he demoed a Prophet 600. Is that a synth, or am I just making numbers up off my head?
I mean, there were quite a few various Prophets or Probes or whatever they want to call them.
Yeah, Prophet 600. So he demoed that and then had an ambient jam. Both were kind of relaxing and also very unsettling at the same time. And those are great. So those will be up. Pete's Noodle will probably go up, unless he goes, oh, Ben, no, please don't. And I don't know who else. Oh, Akira was going to do a shared system tips and tricks, I believe. So that's some make noise, modular patching weirdness. It might not be something that translates well to just listening to it on, because it would be slightly more of a lecture-y style thing, I think. Looking forward to that anyway. Hello, Telmo, you've got your hand up.
I'm going to make a proposal. Last time, we talked about getting PJIP down. I would like to talk to you about doing a duo set. This is something that I've wanted to discuss with my my other half, because she has been doing a lot of experimenting with plants.
Yes, I remember you brought the plant MIDI sprout?
That's it.
Yeah. Yep.
The MIDI sprout brought from Germany. And we would like to do a set with a plant and some ambient guitar, if you were up for it.
Are you free on that November date?
Probably the November, if not 10th. The
November
December.
The 10th. Okay, cool. Well, you're booked. There we go. You heard it here first. Egypt will be playing something live, somewhere, at some time. Hooray!
There we go. Done.
I think that rounds us around to the end of the podcast. Who is armed with a miscellaneous multimedia recommendation? I am. I've got something for you. Somebody's phone is going. Who's that? I don't know. Have I recommended Van Neistat before?
You haven't, but I know who he is.
Good. And yes, you probably thought correctly. It is Casey's brother. He's got a YouTube channel, and I think it's better than Casey's.
It's certainly different.
I think it's definitely better than what Casey Neistat's doing now.
Well,
I think nothing. Yeah, I think early Casey Neistat was far more interesting.
Well, it used to be the Neistat brothers. They did a series for HBO, I want to say.
Ah, the more you know. So, Van Neistat on YouTube. The particular video that I enjoyed most recently is called Mating Analog and Digital Gear. You can see why that is up the street. There was also another one, which was interesting. I'm going to have to get you that title. But I really like the way he approaches his visual storytelling and also the way he narrates his stuff. It's I'm struggling with the words.
Words.
To accurately sum it up.
Words.
Worms.
Worms.
Worms. Worms. Worms. Worms. Worms. Here we go. We are in a fourth turning. What does that mean? Don't know whether I agree with the stuff that's in that video, but it was certainly interesting. talking about repeating patterns throughout history. Mm. Interesting. Either way, Van Nystadt, yeah, go for We Are in a Fourth Turning and Mating Analog and Digital Gear. Those are some good ones, and I think it might just be up the alley of some of our listeners. Who's next? Pete, you ready to go?
Yes. Going back to the nostalgia bit that we had earlier.
Oh, yes.
And the DX7 brochure.
Mm-hmm.
There was a YouTube channel that I became aware of, came up in my stream. I also subsequently noticed that Sonic State had been talking about it as well.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a gentleman on YouTube. He hasn't put up many videos, but one of them goes into an extremely deep dive into the technology of the DX7. I'm talking a chip-by-chip explanation. So anyone who wants to get as deep and dirty as you can possibly can do with DX7, the channel is called PLG David.
Huh.
And that is my recommendation for
going
this week.
All the way with the DX7. Telmo, the honour is yours. Bring us to the end.
Well, I will crack it with a YouTube channel called Cracker Milk.
Uh-huh.
I think we've had a few laughs over this YouTube channel.
Yes,
you and I, and a bottle of Portuguese Rakia or something, like something really strong.
It was delicious, though, whatever it was.
Yeah, so Cracker Milk, a bunch of Australian comedians, they do these really short, less than a video, hilarious comic bits. I guess you just have to see it for yourself, really. It's not for everyone, but they have this sort of playlist that's called Tiny Videos for Tiny Minds. And the bit-sized videos that mathematically produced to make you laugh. So they're just like stupid things like an apple a day or videos like take it off. Legally, you have to tell me stuff like this that just gives you a giggle if you need a giggle. And yeah, apart from releasing a song with P-Gypt on the 1st of October this month, which was my other media recommendation, if you guys want to check it out, it's now on all streaming platforms. And if you just want to laugh, then go for this one.
Most importantly, what's the P-Gypt tune called?
Oh, it's called Blindfold. And the first line is, I'd rather be blind than blindfold.
I thought you were going to say, I'd rather be blind than fold, which wouldn't make any sense. Cracker Milk, I think, appeals on a certain Monty Python level.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're a Monty Python, you might get some of the absurdist stuff.
Yeah.
It works well. Thank you, everybody, as always, for listening to Rack Addicts After Hours. Thank you so much, and tune in next week. Farewell.